You're listening to episode 15 of IDRA Class Notes.
By year two, we have a waiting list. Kids want to know, why didn't you choose me? And mom and dad want to come over and say, I think my son could be in this program. And so we are working with kids who are at risk. We are working with kids who need support. Then people start saying, well, my child does need support. Maybe this is a program where they could help them. And the stigma goes away. The idea that the problematic kids are in this program goes away.
Welcome to the IDRA's Class Notes podcast. I'm Aurelio Montemayor. If you're a regular listener, thank you for coming back. And if you are a first-time listener, this is a podcast for people who care about making sure that every child has an excellent and equitable public education. The Intercultural Development Research Association is deeply committed to making schools work for all children. To do that, we value what the language and the culture that children and families bring. During the course of this podcast, if you hear something that strikes you or that brings up a question you have, we would love to hear your thoughts. There will be details at the end of this podcast for where you can send an email or fill out our comment form online. I also encourage you to subscribe to this podcast either through our website or iTunes and other podcast directories so you won't miss a single episode. We have posted on our website a short survey to learn a little more about you and what you think about this podcast series. The results will help us serve you better. We would really appreciate it if you would hop over to our website and complete the survey. It won't take long because we value your time. Plus, if you do submit the short survey, you'll be entered into a drawing for an Amazon gift certificate. We'll be running this survey for a few more weeks, so please answer some questions. Our topic for today is learnings from the Coca-Cola Valley Youth Program with Dr. Linda Cantu and Dr. Juanita Garcia. Linda Cantu directs the IDRA Coca-Cola Valued Youth Program. She coordinates the training, materials development, evaluation, and other implementation activities for the program. She directs other IDRA projects as well, including our transitions to teaching projects. Linda has a master's degree in urban studies and a doctorate in education leadership. Juanita Garcia is an IDRA education associate. She provides training through seminars and hands-on workshops on cooperative learning topics, children's bilingual literature, and immigrant education. She also works with several of our Coca-Cola Valley Youth Program sites. She holds a master's degree in liberal arts and elementary bilingual education and a doctorate in educational administration. Linda, what is the Coca-Cola Valley Youth Program?
The Coca-Cola Valley Youth Program is a dropout prevention program. The program takes at-risk middle and high school students and makes them tutors of younger children, elementary students that are nearby in their community. The program supports these students by allowing them to use the things that they know about in terms of their own education and helping a younger child learn their math skills, their language skills, supporting their reading skills. The program belongs to IDRA, Intercultural Development Research Association, and it's a 23-year-old program. And we have a partnership with Coca-Cola Foundation to help implement the program across the United States.
Why is it called Valued Youth instead of At-Risk Youth or Dropout Prevention or something like that?
IDRA believes, as we all do at IDRA, that all children are valuable. Every student in our schools is capable, is able. It's our responsibility to find out what is it that helps them be better students. And so we know that every one of them can be successful. But how do we make them successful? How do we, as adults and educators, how do we make the switch for these children into being successful students?
Well, how do you know that it works, that this program works?
Well, we have a 23-year history of watching students who we know are in at-risk situations, placing them as tutors as younger children. we see the connection between the older student and the younger student. We see the older student producing results with our younger children. They're helping them learn their numbers, their alphabet, their reading skills. And for the tutor, what we found is that when students participate in our program, many of these kids, when we say at risk, they might have dropped out of school. They might be identified on their campus as kids who could drop out of school. Those are kids that are not often tapped for this kind of tutoring. We always tap National Honor Society students. Children we know are successful. We don't think at-risk students can do it. What our program has found is they're great tutors, they're great mentors, they're great role models, and 98% of the kids that have participated in our program, we have evaluation and documentation that shows that if they've been in our program, 98% of those students move on to the next grade.
Well, Linda, I know that you work with some sites, but you have the big picture, the bird's eye view of the whole program because you direct it. You're responsible for writing the reports. Juanita, on the ground, as you work with the schools, what tells you that it works?
The teacher coordinators, the whole implementation team, and the students themselves tell me that the program works. The teacher coordinators, because they are the advocates of these students in the district. And that's where we've had a little bit of work to do in shifting that valuing philosophy to adults. And I know that the teacher coordinators at the campuses are the biggest advocates for the students. So they tell me it works. The school administrators, the principals, tell me it works. The school districts that I have been working with tell me it works because they've been with us for 10 years, 10 plus years.
But Juanita, I mean, you seem to be quoting feelings, perceptions of the adults, and there's nothing wrong with that. Is there anything quantitative or anything like that, or is it just basically, it's a good program because I like it?
We have case studies on students, and you know, recently in one South Texas school district, particularly one school, part of the critical elements of the Coca-Cola Valued Youth Program is to have student recognition. Students must be recognized for the work that they do because they tutor all year long. So in May, they have May banquets. One particular school, the teacher coordinator, decided to ask his students what benefits they found, to have a recollection of the year and what benefits. And I thought that was very important because it's students themselves voicing and it's documented. So we asked them to create Word documents and then put it together in a booklet that they gave out to parents and administrators at the end of year banquet. And each student, instead of having, you know, I think they had one guest speaker and, you know, the principal talking, but the time was given to the students so they could each read what they had to say, and it was just amazing. I have a copy of the booklet. So they did. The program says that additional benefits are enhanced basic academic skills, a perception of self.
And is this documented other than, let's say, this book that they put together? How do you measure the impact?
How do you measure the impact? Quantitatively, we have a rigorous online evaluation where we do pre and post of their grades. We have a Pierce Harris that takes the perception of self and all kinds of standardized tests.
Right. Now, is this done for a sample of the students?
Every student that participates in our program, every school district and every campus that participates, we collect academic and demographic data for those students. So we collect their core subject areas, grades at the end of the school year, their math, their language arts, their reading scores. We also collect their standardized test scores. And so we do a qualitative collection of data, and then we do a quantitative collection of data. So that's how we help school districts also and campuses determine for themselves, is this program supporting your kids? Is it helping your kids?
So there's research, and this is a data-driven program, but I like what Juanita was saying, that there's a face to it, there's a human face to it, and both are important.
Right.
What do you see as the big challenges in this program? What are the challenges?
When I think of challenges, when we visit a school, any school, a new school that we're implementing it, one of our challenges, I have to say, is always the teachers themselves. Sometimes the administration. We come forward, they ask us about the program, and we say, well, you're going to be working with at-risk students, and they're going to go into your elementary campuses, and they're going to tutor. And the teachers and the administrators always come back with two points. One is, are they capable? I mean, can they read well enough? Do they know their math skill? Can we send these students over there to the elementary campus? And the second question they always ask is, will they be responsible enough to do this? How can we be sure that we're going to send them over there and they're going to be role models and not misbehave? So those are two challenges that we face often when we're working with them. Now, the flip side of that is 23 years of experience. And teachers, as Juanita was talking about, who talk to us about their great tutors. And it only takes them, and in this case, the first 6 weeks, teachers do see that when the kids walk over to the elementary campus, whatever problems they might be having on the secondary campus, when they go to the elementary campus, they know they have a job. They know they have a responsibility. And when they get there, the elementary teachers always tell us, they do such a great job. And when those kids hear them say that, they show up every day. They have somebody responsible waiting for them. So the two biggest challenges, I think, is letting adults know that, of course, they're capable. Of course, they're able. And so we spend all our time working with adults.
It feels like it's the little ones, the two T's, who create the miracle. They grab the teenager's heart.
Absolutely.
Can you think of this past year an example or something like that that happened in one of your campuses, Juanita?
As I'm looking here at some of the quotes that these students said, because I really learned as I read these documents, I really learned from them myself.
What are some of the things that this year's tutors at one of these schools were saying?
Well, there's a couple of them that say that they hope that their tutees will remember them for the rest of their lives. And they're hoping that the tutees will go on and graduate and go to college. They're wishing this for their little ones.
For their little second graders.
They also say that now they know how hard their teachers work. So that when they go back, they're going to be better students. And so every single one of them, you know, about missing, you know, one of the things we look at is disciplinary referrals and absenteeism. And they're all going, they even said, if I miss a day of school, my tutees are also going to miss learning time. So, you know, they're thinking that. They wake up in the morning and they think about their tutees. What am I going to do with them today? And they're very open. When we ask them, they're very open.
So do you think it's, let's say every site has a teacher coordinator. She's like the one that shepherds the program and helps prepare the tutors and monitors their work. Is it his or her positive feedback to the tutors that creates the change? I mean,
it's like Linda said, it's as many adults as we can to bring in the positive feedback for them, because I know that these tutors that I'm talking about here that I received the quotes from mentioned their elementary receiving teachers. Those elementary teachers are so special because they're the ones that are with them. They make them feel welcomed.
An elementary receiving teacher is the one that hosts the tutor, that allows the tutor to come
into her classroom to tutor her children, plans with the tutor, talks to them, gives them feedback. And every single one of these tutors have said that they feel so welcomed at the school. And that's so important in that connection that they need.
And this is something that their own secondary content area teachers don't necessarily tell them or perceive in them.
Exactly. Some do, but that's still a challenge, getting that shift of content area teachers to the valuing philosophy.
So somebody will still tell you, well, why do you pick these kids? Pick the good ones, not these.
Yeah, they're the troublemakers.
You're rewarding bad behavior or something like that, yeah.
So when I think of one particular campus that we've worked with, I think initially, when they first implemented the program, the secondary campus in particular had that very thought that you have. In fact, argued, why pick these kids? There are other kids who deserve to do this activity? You know, why them? So that was our first inclination. This was going to be an up, you know, hill battle with these guys. The kids from the elementary campus, as Juanita said, they were the ones that smiled every time the kids walked in. Thank God you're here. The elementary kids, I mean, would start grabbing at the tutors. Oh, are you going to be my tutor today? Are you going to be my tutor today? Even though they're selected to do it. But two or three kids, those are the ones they work with. The whole class welcomes them. There's your tutor. He's coming in the door. So that's how kids, the first inclination they get, I'm doing a great job here. Well, what happened at this particular campus, after a year, with secondary teachers being argumentative, I don't see how this is going to help. In year two, in that campus, we had several teachers who came to our teacher coordinator and said, I have a student I think would fit well in your program. Do you have room for them? And we knew then that the campus had started to realize it does make a difference for them, because they had found kids in their own classrooms. They thought, somebody needs to be their advocate. Can we give them to you? And then we said, the campus was recognizing that there was something positive going on with the kids.
How is it that the program doesn't get labeled or have a stigma on it? You know, I've been to many campuses where we have the at-risk program, and even if you sugarcoat it, the kids know, oh, God, I'm one of the bad ones, and that's why I'm in the program. Does this happen to you with your kids, with your tutors? How do you avoid the stigma?
The stigma of saying you're at
risk. It's an at-risk program, yeah, and you're at risk.
Just by being positive and making sure that team, we have an implementation team that knows, made up of a program administrator, principals, elementary principals, and teachers, counselors, that it's a valuing. I've got a program for you. This will be great for you in the
recruitment.
You're going
to be a tutor.
You are going to be a tutor. This is really going to... So the school personnel themselves are telling the students that this is a program that's wonderful and that'll work for them.
And I was going to say also in that we, when we bring the kids into the program, part of the intent is we know it's an at-risk program. But it's not something we vocalize every day to the kids. It's not something we vocalize at all to them. But the kids, amongst themselves, they all know something's going on here. I got selected. And I want to go back to year one. In year one, there's a little bit of a stigma to it. It's like, why did they choose me? You know, even though they start to love it, in the beginning, there's always this sense they chose me because I'm at risk. By year two, we have a waiting list.
Right.
Kids want to know, why didn't you choose me? And mom and dad want to come over and say, I think my son could be in this program. And so we are working with kids who are at risk. We are working with kids who need support. Then people start saying, well, my child does need support. Maybe this is a program where they could help them. And the stigma goes away. The idea that the problematic kids are in this program goes away. And I mean, I find that from campus to campus to campus, by year two, once they see the success of the kids, once they see how people start to treat them, and I want to say the kids get a stipend for participating in the program, it's a great opportunity for them. I mean, you know, even though they're getting a stipend for participating, it's not always that the money that brings them back. It's that I'm doing a great job here. And so by year two, that whole idea that these are at-risk kids is, my child could be in this program. And I want to say teachers come and say, this child should be in the program. And kids themselves line up and say, can I enroll in the program? So it is a program for at-risk kids. But it's got such a positive ending to it all the time, every year, that that stigma isn't really a stigma anymore.
And the name is the Coca-Cola Valued Youth Program. Juanita, any closing point you want to make about the program?
Well, Linda mentioned the stipends, and every time I ask the tutors what's the best thing they've ever done with the paycheck, it's always to help their mother and their father have to pay bills. One even said buying medicines from grandma. So it shows the very caring nature of these students and how they've shifted themselves into thinking that they were not at risk, or they were failing in school and not going to school, to where now they're a big part of the school community and helping their families as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you, Dr. Juanita Garcia. Thank you, Dr. Linda Cantu.
Thank you for having us, Aurelio.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to IDRA Class Notes. For more information on IDRA and other Class Notes topics, go to www.idra.org. You can also send us your thoughts by email to podcast@idra.org or fill out the form on our podcast webpage at www.idra.org/podcasts.